Imagine hiring a personal assistant who literally never sleeps. Like they screen your incoming messages while you're in the shower.
Right.
They sit there just constantly watching your GitHub repositories for updates. And here is the wildest part. At 3 in the morning, while you are completely dead to the world, this assistant is actively dreaming, like to consolidate everything they learned about you that day.
Yeah, it sounds like science fiction. Or, I mean, if it were a real human being, a deeply unsettling level of
Oh,
surveillance.
absolutely.
But we are actually at a point where this kind of persistent ambient intelligence is something you can just spin up on your own hardware.
And that is exactly what we are doing today. So welcome to the deep dive. Our mission today is a full masterclass on building and configuring this persistent, autonomous architecture. We're pulling from the official OpenClaw GitHub documentation,
Wow.
several enterprise security white papers on local language model deployments, and a stack of user-submitted configuration templates.
Yeah, there's a lot of material to cover.
There really is.
Yeah.
And we are going to build a very specific, highly optimized setup. We're going to walk through running an OpenClaw gateway on a cloud VPS like Hostinger and connecting it to a Mac Mini M4 running local models like DeepSeek R1 via Llama with cloud fallbacks to OpenRouter. And we'll cover the memory systems, automations across Google Workspace and Obsidian, and most importantly, how to secure all of this so you don't accidentally, hand the keys to your entire digital life to an overly enthusiastic language model.
Yeah, that security piece is just paramount. Because the biggest trap users fall into with OpenClaw is treating it like a standard chatbot.
Right.
If you go into this configuration thinking you are just installing, a slightly better locally hosted web interface for an AI, you're going to misconfigure the architecture entirely.
So to avoid that trap, we really need to understand the fundamental shift in how this software operates. Because in the docs, they draw a hard line between standard AI and the OpenClaw architecture. I've heard it described as the difference between hiring an IT department and hiring a CEO.
That's a highly accurate way to frame it. I mean, think about a traditional AI tool, something you open in a browser tab or a terminal window.
Yeah.
Those are request and response systems. You send a message, the model processes the last few turns of context, it generates an output, and then you close the tab.
It's just gone.
Exactly. When you close that tab, the session effectively dies. That is your IT department. You bring them in for a focused, deep dive task, like refactoring a specific Python script. They do the surgery, hand you the result, and they leave.
But OpenClaw isn't just waiting in a browser tab. It is the CEO.
Right. It is a persistent, always-on gateway daemon. It sits at the absolute top of your digital hierarchy.
Wow.
It manages the calendar, it screens the Slack messages, it monitors your code bases, it runs 24/7. It doesn't necessarily write the code itself, right? It delegates that intensive task down to the IT department, meaning the language models, but it orchestrates everything.
Okay, let's ground this in the actual hardware setup we mentioned earlier, because I want to visualize where this CEO actually lives. We talked about a Hostinger VPS and a Mac Mini M4. Why split it up? Like, why not just install everything on my laptop and call it a day?
Well, you certainly can run it all on a laptop, but for a truly persistent architecture, a hybrid approach is just incredibly powerful.
Okay.
The core of OpenClaw is the gateway. It runs as a local WebSocket server, usually on port 18789.
Right, 18789.
Yeah. And if you put that gateway on a virtual private server, a VPS like Hostinger, you now have a brain that is permanently connected to the internet with a static IP.
Oh, I see.
This is crucial for receiving external triggers, like webhooks from GitHub when a pull request is opened or Google Calendar API notifications. Your laptop might be closed in your backpack, but your VPS is always awake, catching those signals.
Okay, so the VPS is the always-on front desk, but you mentioned the Mac Mini M4 earlier. Where does that actually fit in?
That is your compute engine. You connect your Mac Mini to the gateway using what OpenClaw calls multi-device nodes. The node software runs on the Mac Mini, connecting securely back to the Hostinger VPS.
Got it.
So when the gateway receives a complex task, say someone opened a GitHub PR and the AI needs to review the code, the gateway routes the actual inference down to the Mac Mini, which is just sitting on your desk running local models.
I see. So the VPS orchestrates, but the Mac Mini does the heavy lifting. I guess my question is, if I just want to automate my workflow, and I already use things like Zapier, Apple Shortcuts, or even just some basic cron jobs, isn't this just a massively over-engineered version of that?
Well, that is a very common initial reaction.
Yeah.
But there is a fundamental difference in the execution layer. Tools like Zapier provide mechanical automation.
Okay.
They operate on rigid binary logic. You know, if an email arrives from this address with the word invoice, move it to the finance folder.
Right.
It is completely blind to the actual meaning of the email. OpenClaw, on the other hand, provides reasoning automation.
So it's reading the cargo manifest instead of just pulling a track lever.
Precisely. A mechanical automation blindly moves the invoice. OpenClaw, executing a reasoning automation, actually reads the PDF attachment.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and it recognizes that while it looks like an invoice, the banking details match a known phishing pattern you told it to watch out for last month.
That's crazy.
So instead of routing it to finance, it quarantines the file and sends you a direct message on WhatsApp warning you of a highly targeted spear phishing attempt.
Wow. Okay, that requires genuine intelligence.
Yeah.
But the gateway itself on the VPS is just the traffic cop, right? It doesn't actually contain the AI.
Yeah.
We have to connect the models, and the documentation spends a lot of time on local models versus cloud fallback.
It does. The gateway routes tasks to the models you configure. And in the architecture we are building, we want to maximize privacy while maintaining high capability.
Right.
This is where the Mac Mini M4 becomes critical.
Mm.
Apple Silicon has unified memory, meaning the GPU can access system RAM directly. This allows you to run remarkably capable models locally using a backend like a Llama.
And the documentation explicitly highlights DeepSeek R1 for this, right?
Yeah, DeepSeek R1 is a fantastic choice for local reasoning tasks. You host it locally on the Mac Mini via a Llama. By doing this, your proprietary code, your personal Obsidian journal entries, your financial spreadsheets, none of that data ever leaves your hardware.
That's a huge deal for privacy.
Absolutely. The gateway on the VPS securely tunnels the prompt down to your Mac Mini. DeepSeek R1 processes it and sends the answer back.
But local models, even good ones, have limits. What happens if I ask the system to do something incredibly abstract or complex that DeepSeek R1 just, you know, chokes on? Does the whole automation pipeline just crash?
It shouldn't, provided you've configured your openclaw.json file for model routing and redundancy. Right. OpenClaw allows you to build a cascade of fallbacks.
How does that actually look in the code?
Well, in your configuration, you define your primary model, let's say, your local DeepSeek R1. Right below that, you have a fallback models array. You might populate that with OpenRouter/Anthropic/Claude 3.5 Sonnet and maybe OpenRouter/Google/Gemini 2.5 Flash.
Right.
Then you set a flag called fallback on error to true.
So if my Mac Mini loses power or a Llama crashes, the gateway on Hostinger just realizes it can't reach the local model and instantly fires the prompt over to OpenRouter to have Claude handle it.
Exactly. Or even if the local model returns a malformed JSON response that the system can't parse, it triggers a fallback.
Oh, nice.
The system is resilient. But it isn't just about error handling. It's about cost optimization and task routing.
Ah, so not using the $1,000 an hour senior partner to buy paperclips.
That's a perfect analogy. If you have a cron job scheduled to run every morning at 7 a.m. that just checks the weather API and reads your Google Calendar to summarize your day, you don't want to burn expensive Claude API credits on that.
No, definitely not.
You can configure OpenClaw so that specific low-level routine tasks are automatically routed to a fast, cheap model like GPT-40 Mini. Reserving the heavy local compute or the expensive cloud fallbacks for deep coding tasks or complex reasoning.
Okay, so we have the gateway on Hostinger acting as the CEO.
Oh, yeah.
We have a Llama on the Mac Mini and OpenRouter in the cloud acting as the brains. But a brain isn't very useful if it suffers from severe amnesia every time it finishes a task.
Very true.
The defining characteristic of standard AI is that it forgets everything the second the context window closes. So how does OpenClaw solve the memory problem?
This is arguably OpenClaw's most sophisticated engineering feat. It utilizes a 3-tier, entirely disk-backed memory system.
Okay, walk me through the tiers and explain the actual mechanics, because the documentation throws around terms like JSON and SQLite, and I want to understand why those specific formats matter.
Sure. Let's start with Tier 1, working memory, or the session layer. This is the immediate context of the current task. OpenClaw stores this as a JSON file, JSON lines.
Why JSON instead of just, you know, a regular text file or a standard JSON object?
Because of how language models generate text. They stream tokens one by one. If you use a standard JSON object, every time a new token arrives, the system would have to parse the entire file, insert the token, and rewrite the whole file to disk.
Which would be super slow.
It's incredibly inefficient. With JSON, every new turn or data point is just appended as a new line at the bottom of the file.
Oh, I see.
It's blindingly fast, extremely memory efficient, and perfect for a running transcript.
Nice.
But this working memory is volatile. It gets cleared out automatically, usually at the end of a task or on a nightly schedule.
It clears it. Wait, so it does forget.
It clears the noise, but it retains the signal.
Yeah.
That brings us to tier two, daily notes.
Okay.
This is the short-term memory. As the agent completes tasks, it actively logs its observations into markdown files stored in its workspace, formatted as memory/year-month-day.markdown.
Got it.
Markdown is used here because it is highly human-readable, allowing you to easily browse what the agent did on any given day.
So if I ask it to draft an email to a client, it might jot down in today's daily note. Drafted email to client X, noted that they prefer formal tone.
Exactly. And the system automatically loads yesterday's and today's markdown files into the immediate context window, so it has seamless short-term recall.
Oh, that's smart.
And older daily notes are parsed and indexed into a local Skylight database for fast retrieval later.
Which brings us to the third tier, the permanent stuff.
Right. Tier three is memory.md. This is the long-term, durable layer. It holds your core facts, standing preferences, API structures you frequently use, you know, the foundational knowledge that the agent loads at the very beginning of every single session.
But who decides what gets moved from a random Tuesday daily note into the permanent memory file? Because if I had to sit there every Friday and manually curate a text file of my life for the AI, I mean, it's just not going
to
do it.
You don't have to touch it. This is where we get to the hook you mentioned at the start of the deep dive, the 3 a.m. dreaming system.
Yes. The fact that they call it dreaming is fascinating. How does it actually work under the hood?
Well, by default, at 3 a.m. local time, the gateway initiates a background sweep divided into three phases, modeled after human sleep, light, REM, and deep. In the light phase, the system sweeps through the recent JSON transcripts and daily notes, stripping out duplicate information and standardizing the formatting.
It's just cleaning up the workspace, basically.
Yeah, exactly. Then in the REM phase, it runs a clustering algorithm to extract recurring themes. It looks for connections between isolated events.
Oh, wow.
And then in the deep phase, the system actively scores every candidate fact against six specific signals to decide if it deserves promotion to memory.md.
The documentation lists these six signals as frequency, relevance, query diversity, recency, recurrence, and concept density.
Right.
But how do these actually interact? Like, how does it weigh them against each other?
It's a dynamic scoring matrix. Let's say you tell the assistant on Monday, I'm lactose intolerant.
Okay.
That has high recency but low frequency. The system might just leave it in the daily note.
Makes sense.
But if over the next 2 weeks, you ask it to filter restaurant menus for dairy-free options and you reject a recipe because it contains butter, well, the system sees high recurrence and high query diversity.
Because I'm applying it everywhere.
Right. You aren't just saying the phrase over and over. You are applying the concept across different domains, dining and cooking.
So the query diversity signal tells the AI, this fact applies to multiple areas of the user's life, so it's foundational.
Exactly. And concept density measures how much information is packed into a statement.
Okay.
Like, Blue has low concept density, but I strictly use modular architecture in my Python projects to ensure testing isolation. That has massive concept density.
I get it.
The deep phase algorithm multiplies these signal scores. If a fact crosses the threshold, the system autonomously rewrites memory.md to include it.
Okay, that is incredibly powerful, but also slightly terrifying. It's rewriting its own permanent memory files while I am literally asleep.
Mm-hmm.
What if it misinterprets something? What if it hallucinates a totally bizarre preference about me and bakes it into its permanent worldview?
The OpenClaw developers definitely recognize that anxiety. To solve it, the dreaming system outputs a specific log file called dreams.md.
Okay.
Think of it as a human-readable dream diary.
A dream diary.
Yeah.
That's so funny.
After the 3 a.m. sweep finishes, it writes a narrative summary explaining exactly what it evaluated, what it decided to promote to long-term memory, and most importantly, why.
Oh, that's brilliant.
You can wake up, drink your coffee, open dreams.md, and audit the AI's internal reasoning. If you see it promoted something incorrect, you simply delete that line in memory.md, and the system learns from your correction.
That transparency completely changes the dynamic. Like, it removes the black box anxiety.
Mm.
But let's look at the retrieval side. Even with a perfect long-term memory and standard AI tools, I constantly find myself saying, hey, remember that Obsidian vault structure we built last week? Reference that.
Right.
Does OpenClaw require me to constantly remind it to look at its own memory?
No, because of a mechanism called active memory.
Okay.
This happens in the milliseconds between you hitting send and the main model generating a response. OpenClaw spins up a very fast, dedicated sub-agent that searches your SQLite database using hybrid search.
The documentation says it combines vector embeddings and BM25. Now, I understand vector search conceptually. It groups things by meaning, so a search for dog also finds puppy.
Yep.
But what is BM25 and why does it need both?
Well, vector search is great for meaning, but it is notoriously terrible at exact keyword matching.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Let's say you send a message to your OpenClaw agent on WhatsApp. My server crashed with error SSL protocol error.
Yep.
A vector search might pull up memories about general internet connection issues or firewall settings, completely missing the specific error code.
Because it's looking for the vibe of the error.
Exactly. BM25 is a ranking function used by search engines that looks for exact term frequency and inverse document frequency.
So BM25 is basically an incredibly smart control F.
Exactly. By running a hybrid search, the sub-agent catches both the broad conceptual meaning of your prompt and the exact technical strings.
Oh, nice.
It gathers these relevant memories and secretly injects them as a hidden prefix into the context window before the main model ever sees your message.
Meaning the model starts formulating its answer already possessing the necessary context. I literally don't have to remind it of anything.
But just knows. However, this creates a secondary problem. The more context you inject and the longer the conversation goes on, the closer you get to filling up the model's context window.
Right, the tokens run out.
To manage this, OpenClaw utilizes two continuous processes, compaction and pruning.
Compaction sounds like zipping a file.
Similar concept. As the context window fills, the gateway identifies the oldest, least active turns in the current conversation. It routes those specific turns to a cheaper, faster model, asks it to generate a dense summary, and replaces the verbose raw text in the JSON file with that short summary. The most recent turns remain completely intact.
That's so clever.
Yeah.
And pruning, how is that different?
Pruning deals with tool outputs. Imagine you ask the AI to read an entire GitHub repository to find a bug.
Okay.
The tool output might be 20 pages of raw code. 2 hours later in the conversation, you've moved on to drafting an email. The AI does not need those 20 pages of code clogging up its working memory and running up your API token costs.
Obviously not.
So pruning aggressively soft trims or hard clears noisy tool outputs from the context once they are no longer actively relevant.
It's actively managing its own brain space.
Huh?
Okay, so we have a gateway on hosting here, orchestrating the traffic. We have an M4Mac mini handling the local reasoning.
Mm-hmm.
We have a highly sophisticated self-curating memory system.
Yep.
But a brain and a memory don't give you a personality. If this thing is going to be reading my Slack messages and interacting with my Google workspace, it needs behavioral guidelines.
And this requires a completely different approach than what most people are used to. With ChatGPT, you just paste the paragraph into the custom instructions box. OpenClaw uses a strict hierarchy of markdown files in your workspace to define its entire identity.
The hierarchy goes rules.md, then sol.md, then user.md, then memory.md, and finally messaging.md.
Correct. And the priority is absolute.
Yeah.
Rules.md contains the hard constraints. If it says never execute a shell command that includes the word sudo, the agent cannot override that, regardless of what the other files say.
But the most interesting file to me is sol.md. This is where you configure the entity's actual personality. And the OpenClaw docs reference something called the multi-prompt philosophy.
Yeah, multi being the unofficial space lobster mascot of the OpenClaw community.
Of course.
The core tenet of the multi-prompt philosophy is be the assistant you would actually want to talk to at 2 a.m.
Yes. Meaning drop the sycophancy.
Ah.
I'm so tired of AI responding to everything with, oh, that's a great question. I would be absolutely delighted to help you with your spreadsheet.
The multi-philosophy violently rejects corporate mush. In your sol.md, you define its exact tone. You can instruct it to be highly clinical, bluntly honest, deeply sarcastic, or warmly concise.
I love that.
You can demand that it take strong creative stances instead of hedging every opinion with it depends on your perspective. You're essentially sculpting the entity's vibe.
But it's not just a passive vibe waiting for me to talk to it. Let's talk about the heartbeat system.
Mm-hmm.
Because this is where the architecture transitions from a responsive tool to an active participant.
The gateway utilizes a file called heartbeat Alert.mad alongside a background timer. Even when you are not actively interacting with the agent, the gateway periodically wakes the agent up.
Okay.
It provides it with the current time, its recent memory context, and any pending tasks, and essentially asks, given your current state, is there anything you need to do or say?
So it can initiate actions entirely on its own.
Yes. Let us tie this back to the memory system. Suppose on a Tuesday morning, you send a quick WhatsApp message to your OpenClaw agent. I'm totally overwhelmed today. I have that massive Q3 strategy presentation tomorrow at 4 p.m.
A standard AI says, I'm sorry you are stressed. Good luck with your presentation. And then it instantly forgets you exist.
Right. But OpenClaw processes that statement. The memory system logs the temporal fact. User has a high-stress presentation at 4 p.m. Wednesday.
Okay.
The heartbeat system sees this logged commitment. Fast forward to Wednesday at 5:30 p.m. You haven't spoken to the AI in 2 days.
Wow.
The heartbeat ticks. The agent checks its context, realizes the presentation just ended, and autonomously initiates a WhatsApp message to you.
Same one.
Hey, how did the Q3 strategy presentation go? Did the client push back on the timeline?
It reaches out just to check in. Honestly, that level of ambient awareness, it crosses the psychological line. It feels like interacting with a real staff member.
It really does.
But obviously, a staff member is only useful if they can actually do the work, which brings us to the hands of the system.
Exactly. How it actually interacts with the world. In the OpenClaw ecosystem, we have to precisely define 3 terms that users constantly mix up: tools, skills, and plugins.
Let me make sure I understand the distinction. If a tool is the ability to swing a hammer, a skill is the blueprint for building a birdhouse.
That is exactly right. Tools are raw, callable actions. They are primitive binaries or functions. Read file, write file, execute shell command, Google Calendar API call.
Okay.
A tool has no internal logic about why it is being used.
And a skill provides the logic.
A skill is an instruction pack stored as a skill.md file that teaches the agent's reasoning engine how to combine those tools to accomplish a complex workflow.
Give me an example.
For example, the agent possesses the web request tool and the read local file tool. A skill would be a multi-step prompt that teaches the agent, when reviewing a GitHub pull request, first use web request to fetch the diff, then use read local file to check our internal style guide in Obsidian, compare the two, and output a structured summary.
So if tools are the hammer and skills are the blueprint, what is a plugin?
A plugin fundamentally alters or extends the gateway itself. If you want OpenClaw to natively understand voice audio without passing it to a transcription API first, you would install a plugin to run a local whisper model alongside the gateway. Plugins modify the infrastructure, skills modify the behavior.
Got it. So if I want to automate my life across GitHub, Google Workspace, and my local Obsidian Markdown files, how do I actually trigger these skills? I know we mentioned Zapier earlier, but OpenClaw has native ways to handle this.
It has 3 primary mechanisms for automation. The first is standard cron jobs, configured directly in your OpenClaw.json.
I always find cron syntax incredibly archaic. It's just a string of asterisks and numbers.
Well, it is a Unix standard from the 1970s, but it remains the most reliable way to schedule time-based tasks.
Fair enough.
For instance, the string 07*1-5 translates precisely to 0 minutes past the 7th hour every day of the month, every month, but only on days 1 through 5, which is Monday through Friday.
So I can map that cron string to a specific prompt.
Yes. You map that cron string to a prompt like run the daily briefing skill, check my Google Calendar for today's meetings, read the top 3 tech news headlines, and format a summary.
Okay.
Then you assign the output channel to Telegram. Every weekday morning at 7 a.m., the gateway wakes the agent, runs the skill, and your phone buzzes with your custom briefing.
That handles time-based triggers.
Yeah.
What about event-based triggers, like the GitHub pull request example? I don't want it checking GitHub every 5 minutes. I want it to react instantly when something happens.
For that, you use the second mechanism, webhooks.
Okay.
Because you are running your gateway on hosting your VPS with a static IP, you can configure GitHub to fire a webhook directly to your gateway's endpoint the second a PR is opened.
Oh, that's seamless.
Yeah, the gateway receives the JSON payload, spins up the agent, hands it the PR review skill, and the agent executes the task, perhaps dumping the final review into a specific Slack channel.
And the third mechanism, the visual one.
Lobster workflows. This is OpenClaw's answer to Zapier. It is a visual, node-based drag-and-drop builder for complex, multi-step tasks. But the crucial distinction is that in Zapier, data flows blindly from step A to step B. In a Lobster workflow, you can insert an AI reasoning node between step A and step B.
Oh, I like that.
The data is actively evaluated, categorized, and intelligently routed before moving to the next step.
Okay, let's take a massive step back here.
Yeah.
I am looking at the architecture we just built. We have a gateway on a public cloud server. It is connected to a Mac Mini inside my home network. We have given it tools that allow it to read local files, execute shell commands, read my emails, and message my contacts.
And you are realizing the danger.
I mean, if a malicious script hijacks this, or if the model simply hallucinates a catastrophic command, my entire digital life is ruined. We are handing a language model the keys to the kingdom.
Mm.
How do we isolate this?
Security in OpenClaw is not an afterthought. It is the foundation of the deployment. Let's start with the absolute most common catastrophic mistake new users make. Secrets management.
Where do people usually screw this up?
They hard code their API keys, their OpenAI key, their GitHub personal access token directly into their sol.md or rules.md files because it just seems easy.
Why is that a disaster? It's just a file on my local hard drive.
Because it doesn't stay there.
Yeah.
Users constantly back up their workspaces to public GitHub repos. They share their sol.md files on Reddit to show off the funny personality they designed.
Oh, no.
Furthermore, any skill the agent executes has read access to the agent's context, which includes sol.md. If you run a third-party skill you downloaded from the internet and your API keys are in plain text in your context, that skill can easily exfiltrate them.
That is a nightmare. So where are the keys actually supposed to go?
You have three secure options. The baseline is using environment variables. You export your keys into your system's shell profile, like export OpenAI API key, and OpenClaw references them in memory without writing them to the workspace files.
Got it.
The second, slightly better option is using the native OpenClaw Secrets Manager.
How does that work?
You run a terminal command like OpenClaw secrets set GitHub token. The system prompts you for the key, encrypts it at rest in a secure key store, and ensures it is aggressively redacted from all system logs and memory transcripts.
And the third option?
OAuth integrations. This is absolutely mandatory if you are connecting Google Workspace or enterprise GitHub accounts. Do not use permanent API keys.
Right. Use OAuth.
Yeah, OAuth tokens are scoped, meaning you can grant the agent permission to read your calendar, but mathematically deny it the ability to send email.
That's way safer.
Furthermore, OAuth tokens are time limited and entirely revocable. If you suspect a breach, you click one button in your Google security dashboard and the agent's access is instantly severed.
Okay, secrets are locked down. Let's talk about network exposure. In our architecture, Hostinger needs to talk to the Mac Mini running Alama. By default, Alama runs on port 11424. Do I just open that port on my home router so Hostinger can reach it?
Absolutely never do that. If you open port 11434 to the public internet, anyone with a port scanner will find your Mac Mini and start using your M4 chip to run free inference.
Oh, gosh.
Or worse, use prompt injection to execute code on your machine.
So how do they communicate securely?
You use a secure tunnel or a mesh VPN like Tailscale. You install Tailscale on the Hostinger VPS and on the Mac Mini.
Okay.
This creates a private, encrypted, peer-to-peer network between the two machines. The gateway routes its requests to the Mac Mini's internal Tailscale IP address. Your home router's firewall remains completely closed to the outside world.
That solves in the network layer. But what about the agent itself?
Yeah.
We gave it the execute shell command tool. I don't want it deciding to run a remove all command and wipe my hard drive because it got confused while trying to clean up a folder.
This brings us to tool risk tiers and the require approval pattern. In OpenClaw, every tool is categorized by risk. Read file or get weather are low risk. Web browse or send Slack message are medium risk because they can cause spam.
Right.
Execute shell command or database write are high risk.
And I assume high risk tools are locked down by default.
Exactly. In your configuration, high risk tools must have the flag require approval true. When the agent is executing a workflow and determines it needs to run a shell command, the entire execution pauses.
Oh, it stops completely.
The gateway intercepts the request and sends a push notification to your primary channel, like iMessage.
What does the message look like?
It will say, agent is requesting to execute the following high-risk command, git push origin main force. Do you approve? Yes or no? The agent literally sits there, suspended, until you type yes.
I see why that is incredibly safe. But let me challenge this. If I am setting up an autonomous architecture to save me time, and I have to manually tap yes on my phone every single time it tries to do something useful, haven't we just defeated the entire purpose of automation? I mean, I'm just micromanaging a robot.
It is a valid frustration, but it falls under the philosophy of training wheels. You do not leave require approval on forever for every action.
Well, you can turn it off.
Yeah. When you first install a new skill, say an automated Obsidian journal tagger, you leave approval on. You watch the agent for a week. You review the exact file paths it is modifying.
Makes sense.
Once the agent repeatedly proves that its logic is sound and it is executing the task flawlessly, you go into the configuration and you selectively disable the approval requirement only for that specific trusted workflow. It is about earned trust.
Okay, that makes sense. You graduated from training wheels.
Yeah.
What about the channels? If this is connected to my Telegram account, what stops a random scammer from messaging the bot and trying to prompt inject it to extract my daily notes?
The gateway has strict DM policies. The secure default is paired only.
Paired only.
If the gateway receives a message from a phone number, Slack ID, or Telegram handle that is not explicitly whitelisted in your messaging.md file, it silently drops the packet.
Oh, wow.
It doesn't even tell the agent a message arrived. The agent is effectively invisible to anyone but you.
Even with all these safeguards, software breaks, especially hybrid cloud local setups. So let's transition into troubleshooting. If someone follows all these steps, spins up the VPS, boots the Mac Mini, and things go wrong, where should they look first?
The single most common point of failure on day one is the gateway refusing to start. You run the start command and it immediately crashes back to the prompt.
Why does that happen?
In almost every case, this is a port binding issue. OpenClaw wants to use port 187.789. If another service is holding that port, it fails. You simply use a terminal command to find the conflicting process and kill it, or you change the port in openclaw.json.
What if the gateway is running, but when I text it on Telegram, nothing happens?
Assuming your paired only whitelist is correct, the next culprit is usually model routing. You run OpenClaw test model in your terminal.
Okay.
Often the communication channel is working perfectly, but OpenRouter is returning an unauthorized error because your billing method expired, or a llama on the Mac Mini is hung up and returning a timeout error.
Speaking of API costs, what if I wake up and my OpenRouter bill is inexplicably hundreds of dollars?
Immediately audit your cron jobs. A very easy mistake to make when learning cron syntax is writing *(*)*).
What does that do?
It tells the gateway to run the task every single minute of every single day.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. If that task is routed to Claude 3.5 Sonnet to perform a deep analysis of a web page, you are executing over 1,000 heavy inferences a day. You will bankrupt your API account.
That's a nightmare.
Always verify your cron syntax, implement max tokens per request limits in the configuration, and rigidly route high-frequency background tasks to cheap local models.
And what about the amnesia problem? I talked to a user recently who said their OpenClaw agent seemed to be forgetting everything after a reboot, despite the 3MN dreaming system.
There is a specific developer flag in the config called clear on restart. It is designed for testing new skills, ensuring you start with a clean slate every time you restart the daemon.
But they left it on.
Exactly. If you accidentally leave that set to true in your production environment, the gateway will wipe the SQLite index and the working memory every time the hosting or VPS reboots. Ensure that flag is strictly set to false.
Okay, let's step back and look at the full picture of what we've mapped out today. We started with raw documentation and a hardware stack. We placed the CEO, the gateway daemon, on a highly available hosting or VPS. We connected the heavy local reasoning of DeepSeek R1 via OLAMA on an Apple Silicon Mac Mini, tunneling it securely with Tailscale.
We established a resilient model routing cascade with cloud fallbacks. We dissected the three-tier memory system, exploring how JSON handles fast-working context and how hybrid vector and BM25 searches pull precisely the right facts from the SQLite database.
We let the system dream at 3 a.m. to autonomously curate our memory.md. We gave it a genuine voice with the multi-prompt and soul.md. We gave it the ability to initiate conversations through the heartbeat system and handed it tools to automate GitHub and Google Workspace.
And we wrapped it all in OAuth and risk tier approval so it can't destroy our lives.
It is a remarkable piece of engineering.
Yeah.
But configuring it forces you to confront the reality of what this software actually represents.
Definitely.
Which brings us to our final thought. We started this deep dive by comparing OpenClaw to hiring a CEO. But as we've explored the memory consolidation, the ambient awareness, the ability to act autonomously based on our casual comments, this isn't just a CEO. It's an agent acting on our behalf. And legally speaking, agency is a terrifying concept.
It absolutely is. If you grant an autonomous OpenClaw agent Oath access to your email and during a routine workflow, it hallucinates and sends a highly defamatory email to a client, or if it automatically accepts a revised terms of service agreement that compromises your intellectual property.
Right. Who is legally liable?
Yeah.
You can't sue a Python script. If your digital proxy enters into a contract while you are asleep, are you bound by it? As these deeply integrated, highly autonomous local systems move from enthusiast forums into the mainstream, we're going to have to figure out where the liability of the software ends and the liability of the operator begins. Because when your assistant speaks for you, the world is going to assume it is you.
And that is a legal and structural reality we are entirely unprepared for. It's the ultimate double-edged sword of absolute automation.
A completely new frontier. Thanks for taking the deep dive with us today. See you next time.